First item on our workshop agenda tonight is the donation of art to the Othello Centennial Committee. Michael, do you want to come up here for a moment, please?
The citizens of Othello will celebrate the community centennial in 2010. A committee has been formed, and they are planning various activities for the Centennial Festival. One of their programs includes creating posters to advertise the centennial. The contract was entered into with local artist Michael Lewis. Michael has painted the picture which depicts the early steam engine that traveled through our area and became a major train hub between the West Coast and the Midwest. The trains brought settlers to Othello, and the city was incorporated on May 23rd, 1910. Michael Lewis has graciously donated the painting to the Othello Centennial Committee to be used solely for the purpose of advertising the centennial. Posters will be made using the oil paintings, and the art will be auctioned off at an upcoming local event to generate money for the centennial coming on. All proceeds will go toward the centennial projects, including scholarships for the graduating class of 2010. On behalf of the City Council, the Centennial Committee, I want to thank Mr. Lewis for his generosity, and I hereby present him with this certificate. This certificate, the City of Othello awards this certificate of appreciation to Michael Lewis for his contribution to the City of Othello Centennial Program.
That's a nice surprise.
Thank you very much.
Item number two, walk path Eagle Scout sign design. Jay? You're up. There we go. You brought a couple of Eagle Scouts with you.
First off, we'd like to thank all the city and especially Public Works and Jay, because they have been a huge help on this project. This is the first time we've done anything like this, so it's really eased us into this kind of stuff. Basically,
we've made some of the signs for our exercise station and on the mile markers. This is for the mile markers that we were proposing that we have. We're planning on putting 4 mile markers that will look like this with a different number, of course. And then we have our other signs for what to do with the exercise stations. That's for a vertical jump. Which will be like this with, these will be on top of each other for the vertical jump station. Oh yeah, and we were on our main sign, we were gonna make it, and then we had it, we had a question that we asked Jay. The current path that goes and runs through Lions Park, these are tennis courts, and then through here, and then this is the starting point. This path is 3.8 miles long, and if we changed it to this and it go around the baseball diamonds and just go up there, it'd go to about 4 miles, or we could use our 4th mile marker and it'd be a full 4 mile run. So we were asking if those changes could be made or not.
You want to request to sign the whole 4 mile course?
Yeah.
What has happened is originally this was somewhere about a 4.8 mile walk path, and through their measurements they found that 3.9 is what it actually was. And so they're proposing on the top path here that it be taken out of Lions Park, go around Lions Park, and down, as you see the differences, you between the two maps here. This is currently what we have. This is what they're proposing to make it a full 4 mile path.
The only downside of that that I could see is just going along Hamlet there, and there's no sidewalk along Hamlet on either side of the street.
How, what is that, a 2 block?
It's around the park.
Two square blocks, and maybe three.
It's about a 5 block stretch through there, 6, 7.
Now, didn't we have in our budget one time to do that?
What we had in the budget at one time was to finish different portions of the sidewalks. There's a couple of portions of this path that do not have sidewalks in right now.
I'm talking about Lyons Park. I thought once we had talked about...
We did the south side of the park quite extensively.
We did put sidewalk in on the south side, correct, to the tennis courts. There's a couple of residential sections on the current path that do not have sidewalk that need to be finished. And the north side of the pool parking lot also does not have sidewalk.
We probably should put a walk path down before we put signage. I mean, that would be my, we could come back and fill in the gaps later.
Yeah.
Like Tim says, I think we're budget-wise, it might be something that we talk about in our upcoming budget talks for 2010.
Okay, but That's only
maybe you need to clear it up more. What you want to do?
Yeah.
You want to put signage around the park or around the baseball diamonds?
Well, actually,
we have the signs for mile 3 is, and that's right here, and then mile 4 would be just
it's over next to the start.
Yeah. No, we're not for here.
Yeah.
So wouldn't be any actual differences along the path that's already here.
Yeah.
We're talking
the difference of the 10-20 miles. Why don't you go ahead and put the signs up, and then we'll work in and fill the gaps in between.
Yeah, if there's a block or two, then you put a little pressure on council to, fill in the gaps.
If we are at 3.9 miles, we could find a tenth of a mile somewhere, probably fairly easy.
Where does it need to be? Right there where they have it drawn out? And then up
that's
there.
A little over 4 miles. It's probably 4 to 10.
It's 4.
Showing
where each mile is.
Okay, pointing out each mile.
That's mile 1 is right here. This point is mile 2 is here in Quas Park. 3 is here. Corner of Lines and Forge here.
With their proposed.
That's with the other.
Currently right now where we're missing sidewalk is along here. Missing sidewalk here. I believe everything else is there. There might have been a short section right here that does not have sidewalk. So even if the plans change for the path, it doesn't change where the sidewalks are except for here. Then you've got to have sidewalk all the way here.
Were they going to sign the path? Do people know to cut through by the current path that it shows by along Pine or whatever it is south of the ballparks and go through there, or is that part of their project?
Originally, there was going to be two different short path, long path, and there is signs for that we have at Public Works, but it was never finalized. Mm-hmm.
So do the signs have a map on them so they know how to?
No. Just a mile marker station.
Okay. Actually, there is going to be one large sign at the very beginning of the path, which is right next to Mirastar, and it's going to detail all of, it's going to detail, well, whichever path we choose or we agree on. And it'll point out each mile marker and directly where to go. And also, we were thinking on putting a second smaller route that's only
second mile,
just under 2 miles. Just under 2 miles. It starts where this one starts and goes down, and then comes up. What's 14? 14. Mm-hmm. And it just makes a much smaller loop that wouldn't require any sign adjustment. But it'll be on the main map as another path.
No, your map, your top map makes more sense, I think, in the long run, as instead of zigzagging through like the bottom map does. Maybe Ken has a good idea. Maybe we should okay the signage and then, you know, fill in the gaps. Possibly add some sidewalks there where we don't have them. Yeah. The bottom one kind of zigzags through the park. It'd be kind of hard to follow. The upper one would be easier to remember if you're jogging or running, I think.
I think we've got to put it in the budget. Take a look at it. Ken said.
It's a lot of sidewalks.
We have a lot of people around that park.
It's... I agree with you. We should be chipping away at it, because for school kids and everything else, they're all walking down the street now, and we do need a sidewalk there.
Well, it's getting to be a safety issue up there too.
Right.
Yeah. Kids are in the street up there. Something needs to be done anyway.
Okay, we will have this on our agenda at our next meeting. Do we need a consensus that it's okay to sign the whole 4 miles the way you have it on top? Is there a consensus?
Sure. Sounds okay to me. You do it.
Good job. Okay.
Thank you.
We're going to run down here to item number 5. There's quite a delegation here from All American Propane. About the water connection agreement. So if we could fast forward and then we'll back up and catch number 3.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Before you is a letter from All American Propane, who is requesting a number of things from the city. The one before you that will for consideration is the establishment of a 10-year pay period for a main connection charge that's established under Othello Municipal Code, Section 12-16-287. This was established as a result of improvements that the city undertook to the water main between Bench Road and Curtis Street along Broadway. All American Propane has established a new site located along this section of roadway along Broadway. They are desiring to obtain a building permit to erect a building is associated with their business. It will be a showroom and storage room and other needs associated with their propane business. If you've driven by there, you've seen they've already installed 2 very large tanks and intend on installing a 3rd at that site for home barbecue tanks and smaller tank sizes rather than the large delivery size. But as part of the installation of their building, they would be required to obtain a building permit and connect to city water. That connection would be the normal $1,200 fee for setting the meter, but in this case there would also be a fee of $7,823.18 based on the frontage along those improvements. And they're requesting that item be deferred over a 10-year payment period. We've spoken with the city attorney in regards to this, and the 10-year period is agreeable under the law, but it is necessary for the city to charge a reasonable interest rate or return on the investment during that 10-year period. And as you note in our staff report, we're suggesting an interest rate of 4% over that 10-year. And as you've indicated, there are folks here from All American Propane. I'm sure they could explain additionally their desire to do this, and I'd be happy to respond to any questions that you might have.
Is there anybody from All American Protein?
Yes.
Step up and introduce yourself.
Yes, my name is Dick Start. I'm the owner of All American Propane. Our corporate office is over in Yakima, And we had an opportunity to come to your fair city and set up a propane operation here. We were fortunate in light of the fact that our competition here seemed fit to not need the people that were with them any longer there, so we seemed fit to hire them. And that's how this all came about. With that, a couple of things have happened. I've been in the propane business for 50 plus years, and we put in a lot of propane operations across the country with some of the largest propane companies as well as some of the smallest. But what happened here that kind of threw us off base was when we first came in, I talked to the seller, and it was one of the things that came up prior to that was we met with you folks here and suggested that maybe this be a place for us to go and set our operation up where we were out of the mainstream and out into a commercial area versus we were looking at putting one in that was down here at, was off of, trying to think of the street down the main.
Broadway.
Mm-hmm. And it was suggested that probably that wasn't the right way to go, and we talked with the fire marshal, et cetera, and it wasn't hard to see that what he had to say about it made real good sense, that we looked someplace else. We then took a look, the next place we took a look at was we were going to go out into the new area there where Mike Blinsky at the port, or Beardsley, pardon me. And we looked at it there, and the reason that we got turned off on doing that there was that he didn't expect that there was going to be any utilities, water, electrical, or whatever, to that side of the road in that corner that we were looking at for approximately 2 to 5 years. And he wasn't sure just how long that was going to be. Well, we had to get moving. We bought these tanks here in town, and we needed to move them. We needed to get them out there. So then it was suggested by you folks that we take a look down there off of Broadway and see if that vacant land down there might work for us. So then we went from there to the owner of the property and talked to him. And some of the questions that were asked, is there anything in the sale of this property that we should know about up front? As far as he was concerned, nothing. He said everything is, the water's out front, you've got the water, the power runs down the front, I'm sure you can get them to run power into you. And so it was pretty much a given that there wasn't a problem in taking and buying this. So at that time, we went ahead and made our deposit and then went ahead and got with escrow to get this consummated and done. We got to escrow, and escrow had not, at that particular time, had not mentioned to us or said anything about the latecomer's fee for the water that went down the front of this section. Well, we had already kind of jumped the gun with our budget because of the fact that when we went to tear it out, the system out at the other location at Simplot, we found that there was a sizable fee that had to be paid as a permit to move down there. Well, this came after we had already bought the land, etc. So we went ahead and did that. Then the next thing that came up was we found out Carla, our secretary, did some research and she got some stuff from the city as far as codes and stuff was concerned. And at that time found out that there was going to be a $1,200 fee for All American that was inside the city limits that we had to pay for that facility, the water for that facility, as having that 1-inch meter. The second thing was there was going to be another $1,200 to have that 1-inch less meter put to the inside of where our property was at that point. I don't have any problem with that, folks. The problem that I did have was we already are finding that we're getting outside of where the budget's going, et cetera, et cetera. Then I found out that there was another $7,823.18 for this latecomer deal, which came as an absolute shock. So at that particular point in time, I went back to escrow and the title company and said, why didn't you find this? Well, in their research, there was nothing there that they did find that said we had to do this. So I went to my own corporate lawyer and asked him if he would take and address this with Mr. Hyman in regards to where can we go, what we can do. At that point in time, it was suggested by my lawyer, my attorney, that maybe what we should try and do is do the same thing as we did with the power. Stretch it over a period of time and be willing to take and pay whatever the percentage was that we needed to pay to have that done, if they would allow us to do that and have that added on monthly to the bill or whatever over that period of time, or in one chunk of money divided into a 10-year period. So that's kind of why we're here today. That's one of the reasons we're here today, is to see if that's possible. The second thing was that we ran into was we also found out that the Othello codes and permit fees, that a septic system had to be put in, which we knew we had to have a septic system in there of some type of collection of waste. And at that particular time, they also told us the possibilities were very strong that within a 2-year period that the sewer would be out to that location where we could connect to it. And then in looking at the stuff that we, or material that the Othello people had, it stated that if we did do this at the period of time, whatever system we had in there, we would have to cut it out at that particular time within 30 days hooked to the city sewer. And doing a little more checking then at that point in time, we said, let's go in and find out what it's going to cost to take and put a drain field in there. They said the possibilities of a drain field were probably not going to happen, for the simple reason was that in that particular area, they didn't think that's what they would allow us to do, but rather that we should put a pressurized septic system in. Then I went to some people over in Yakima, as well as an outfit up in Moses Lake, and asked them and said, approximately how much money is it going to cost us to put this pressurized system in? They figured a minimum of $14,000. And I said, well, what do I do with this pressurized system in 2 years when I'm hooking to the city service? Well, at that time, that would have to be removed. So you get into a pressurized system, get into removing that, and just the dirt moving and stuff that we've done on that property to this point, we have over $17,000 spent, and we're not through. So it would cost me a pile of money again, or our corporation a bunch of money again to remove it. What we're asking is this, if it's at all possible, is because the septic system that we need there is not going to be any more than the normal house use, because all it's going to have is toilets in there to service that particular thing, and as far as any other water being used in there, it won't happen. So we're asking if we could put in a collection tank there on the property, right next to where that where the sewer would come out, something that we could have emptied with a honey wagon as many times as it has to be emptied, and we don't expect that to happen very often. And instead of going into the septic field or the pressurized system, if we can't do that, we're in a kind of a quandary right now, and I can't be more concerned than I am at this point, that maybe what we're going to have to do is just have that as a storage area and find another place that we can put an office in if that comes up. Because where as each step that we went through, even with the offices and the requirements that are coming down from the state, that are coming down from our insurance people and what have you, to the type of office we put in, that particular type of office can't be a pole barn office. It has to be something that is metal, has a 6-hour fire rating in it. And so in doing that, that steps you into a lot higher level when it comes to having that erected. So what we're really wanting is, if it's at all possible, to have you take a look at what we can do in regards to the length of time we can have to look after the water situation, as well as what can we do in that interim of the 2-year period. And that's kind of where we're at. Thank you.
Have you talked to the Adams County Health District regarding the
septic tank? I have not. It was brought, somebody asked me here the other day, who was it that we talked to in regards to the drain field? And do you remember, Carla, who that was that in regards to the drain field? That was the health department, wasn't it? We've never posed this tank system to the health department. We really haven't. That's something that just happened here the other day in an area similar to Othello here, where a gentleman had the same thing, where they're going to put sewer in that area within the next 18 to 24 months. And they said, we'll go ahead and put a holding tank in there that meets all of the health specs, and which we would. We would go out and get a fiberglass tank, something that we could dig a hole and put it in the ground and do all the things that we had to do to protect it.
And the fact that we are in the process of taking that Broadway extended area and mm-hmm. and putting sewer and water and
right.
and amenities out there, that in the near future, we're hoping here in the next year or two.
Sure, and we're
as funding lets us do this.
But, right, right.
So I understand. Does anybody know what TNT and Saddle Mountain Farm Supply and Lawrence Oil and all of those businesses coming out, what do they have there for? They have a septic.
I don't know, Jay.
Just a.
I don't know if they're pressurized or just regular gravity septic. I don't know. Been there quite a while.
On the first issue, we can deal with that over time. At it's a proposed here 4% interest on the outstanding balance. We are business friendly here. We want you to be here. We want you to be happy.
Well, and we want to be here, and we want to do everything we can to get this thing up and running, because the whole area around here at the present time, and have for some time, ever since these folks left AmeriGas, our competitor, have asked us, when are you going to have your showroom there? When are you going to have barbecues? When are you going to have heaters and this that we can look at and see, so we don't have to go to Moses Lake or the Tri-Cities to see that stuff? And that's our whole goal. We want to be really known here in this area as having something that is not only a propane plant, but something that everybody can look at and say, we're really happy they're in town. And we've had, right now we've got three families that depend on that propane system, and we will have more than three families as we grow. And we don't want to be hard in what we're asking, and that's not our game. Our game is to work very close with you folks to do what we have to do to make it happen.
Yeah, and we will sure do that.
Okay.
The other issue has to do with the Adams County Health District, and we can also, in light of the fact that we are going to bring that infrastructure up to a higher standard in the next year or two. It's a reason to allow you to have a low-cost system in there. To get, I don't expect you to put in anything that anybody else doesn't have there.
No.
But if they've got the type of septic system that you're explaining here, there's no reason you should have to put in a pressurized one
right.
when you're going to have to abandon it in 18 months to 24 months.
Well, and the part is, too, is that in most cases, people that have put these pressurized systems in and then they hook the sewer, then the requirements under the health department is they can't leave an abandoned system sit there as such. It must be removed and cleaned up, well, like they will with a lot of other stuff. And I understand that clearly, because they don't want to have a system there that could not only smell bad, but
be a liability later.
Yeah, be a liability.
Yeah. Council have any questions?
No, I can agree with you. I think that go ahead and go on the water situation, and as far as the sewer, we'll see if we can get around that for a couple year period here, so we can get in there and get an operation, get going.
So, Mayor, you want staff to put together a contract on the extension of time for the utility payment, and then work with Mr. Stark and the health department for the most efficient
to work through his the other issue here.
Okay.
Well, we really appreciate it, folks, and we'll do our part to do anything you ask us to do. We do want to get it going, and quicker we can get some of these things settled, the quicker we can get a contractor in there and get that building up, and so people know we're there and we've got everything in place.
Yeah, so far, everything's pretty first class out there.
Well, we appreciate that. I just had the bank the other day, and sometimes bankers are a little tough to deal with, but I had a banker ask him if he would come out to Othello and take a look at what we'd done. Come out here, and he called me up, and you'd have to know this man. He is a man of very few words. He doesn't say much, and he's normally, if he says something, I'm either going to help you out or get out, one of the two times. And he came back, and he said, that is really nice. He said, I've looked at a lot of things, but you guys have done it right. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Eamon, it's kind of a sidebar to that. Is that road going to be paved or get paved? Or
which one? On their Summit. Property?
The road going by there to their property.
Summit.
And we addressed that, Daryl.
There's currently asphalt. It is currently asphalted. The asphalt ends at the backside of the commercial flat where it goes into the New Desert Palms development, and then that's oil shot.
Mm. That's the one back to Lolly's? Okay.
So the entrance to their facility is already asphalted?
Yes. Summit is asphalted to the west end of their property.
Mm. Excellent.
Pass their first slide.
Okay.
Again, thank you for choosing Othello, and we will work with you. And
we're proud to be here.
We're glad you're here. We're going to go on through the agenda here. You guys got a drive back to Yakima or whatever. Feel free to get up and leave.
Put this together.
Next item on our workshop is item number 4A and B have to do with the Planning Commission. And so I talked to Mr. Whittaker after our meeting last week, I thought it was a good time to look at what the Planning Commission's job is and what their responsibilities are. And again, the council, I think, needs to know what their job and responsibilities are pertaining to the issues that come out of the Planning Commission. And so, Whittaker just kind of came up with kind of a brief memorandum here to kind of refresh our memories. I was hoping Jim would be here tonight on what exactly their responsibilities are on land issues and how the council responds and what their responsibilities are with things that come out of the Planning Commission. And I'm sure everyone has had a chance to read this. It's pretty short and sweet. The item number 4A and B, it's quite a large, there was put 30 pages or a lot of pages. They spent a lot of time on this, and they even had a hearing. They didn't need to have a hearing, but they had a hearing to see if there was public input, there wasn't any. And then they sent it to the council for their approval. So it's there. I just thought I would put it in your packet and let you go through it. Are there any questions on the memorandum from Whittaker on the Planning Commission and what their jobs are and what their responsibilities are?
Shannon, did this also get sent to Planning Commission?
I don't know.
To each one of the board members?
Daryl has been he's been educating the Planning Commission on what their responsibility. You want to elaborate?
And I have to apologize, I didn't hear your question.
I wanted to know if the Planning Commission, each one of the members that serve, did they get one of these from what?
We have not yet provided them since this just came from the attorney. We are going to put that in their packets for their next meeting as part of their training. But we have been going through a pretty extensive training process with the Planning Commission and outlining their roles and responsibilities, very similar to the memo that you see from Mr. Whitaker, only we're probably going into a lot more depth in terms of the issues behind some of these responsibilities of the Planning Commission. But we will forward this on to them so they have that legal background as well.
Thanks.
I'd just like to say why I appreciate very much that the Planning Commission is volunteers and they spend a lot of time and I think do an excellent job. They are appointed personnel and I don't feel incumbent on me to blanketly accept what they've proposed to us. We are elected officials and we're here to represent the public and my background, my standards, my foresight of the future of this community might not agree with everything they propose, and I feel I need to represent the citizens that elected me with the same standards and same backgrounds. So I not make excuses for disagreeing on certain issues with the Planning Commission. They had it 99.9% right. I just disagreed on a specific setback that I've endorsed since I've been on council about getting buildings and fences and that away from corners so people can see around them. An example of the power of these appointed councils is the library board. They just signed a contract and raised, these are appointed people, not elected, that just raised the cost of running the library from $220,000 to $460,000. So that gives an idea of the power of some of these commissions and boards of non-elected officials. And I don't know that, obviously that's the way the system's in place, that I wholeheartedly agree with that. That's my two bits on the matter.
The Planning Commission, their roles as it pertains to land use issues. They are, you know, I know you made the comment the other day that Councilman Spohr, that your vision of Othello is more than 15-foot setback. Okay, that's what the Planning Commission does. That is their job. Our job as council, if there is an appeal of the Planning Commission's decision, we hear the appeal. That is state law. And there's a lot of things I disagree with too that's going on in the world, but that's just kind of the way it is. Now the issue at hand here tonight is not a land use issue, and it's coming to the council as a recommendation. But they did go through the hearing process, which wasn't necessary, but they wanted to be thorough. When they did this. So with that, let's go to item number 4, consideration of the Planning Commission recommendation. A ordinance considering a commercial district design standards. B, the ordinance to modify site development review process. Carol.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. Good evening again. This matter, as you know, has been before you at your last council meeting. It was tabled and brought to this work study session for further discussion and clarification if necessary. I believe my purpose here this evening is to respond to any questions or are issues that you may have, and perhaps offer some explanation as to why the Planning Commission took action proposing what they proposed.
The reason that we're here tonight, we were two council members short, and this is something that all council people should be here. And Mr. Spohr, basically, Councilman Spohr, had an issue with the 15-foot minimum setback from the front. Could you address that?
I'd be happy to. The setback that's identified in the proposed ordinance does provide for a minimum setback, and I believe that was in the C2 zone, and I'm looking for the table as I'm speaking, so I apologize for that.
Page two.
There's no setback requirement in the C1 zone, as you'll notice. There's no minimum setback. Now, if you look at the C2 zone where the 15-foot setback is proposed, that's the minimum required in that zone. It does not mean that the setback could not be larger. If I understood the concern expressed by Councilman Spohr, one of the concerns that I heard was that a site distance could be a problem with the setback of only 15 feet. And I would like to emphasize that in each case where a building permit is issued and site distance is one of those items that is looked at through the site plan review process, which is the second element of the Planning Commission recommendation. And it's required that either Jay or the city engineer would review that site distance to ensure that it meets street standards for the city of Othello. So the 15-foot minimum is just that, a minimum setback. But if the site distance comes into play and the engineer or our city staff determine that the building needs to be brought back in order to meet those safety standards already established in our code, then that building would need to be moved back. So the site distance issue will always override the setback requirement in our code. And the requirement is a minimum requirement. It does not mean that it can't be larger. The same is true in the C1 zone where there's no setback requirement. If in fact a zero setback created a safety hazard through site distance issues or other reasons, then that building would be required to be set back consistent with other requirements in our code, one of those being traffic design standards and site distance triangles that must be established and maintained. So I don't know if that fully addresses your concern, Councilman, but there are requirements in our code for site design and for the traffic safety elements associated with site distance in other sections of our code. And those must and the site distance and the safety issues always override the minimum setbacks.
What do other communities around us use for a setback number? Moses Lake or?
Well, I think you'll find that in Moses Lake, these are similar to their requirements. I think they actually have a couple of additional zones in the commercial district that have varying degrees of setback, but 15 is generally their largest. They have some larger setbacks in the industrial zones, just as we do. I think they're 25 feet. Other cities are moving towards the idea that within your downtown cores or your main streets, you want to put buildings close to the roadways, mainly for pedestrian access, for the feel and sense of a city. And so you're seeing more and more change in city codes over time that lead to setbacks similar to this. All are different. I mean, each city has its own unique characteristics. But you'll find, I think, over the last several years, that many cities, as they're updating their codes, are going to reduce setbacks in their commercial zones.
It looks like, depending on what the business is, if you've got a medical facility, maybe you'd move it closer to the road. If you have a bank, it seems like they build on the back of the lot and put the parking in front and the sides. So I guess there needs to be some variance there to work.
Well, again, these are minimum requirements. So if it's 15 feet but a business wants to be 25, they could certainly do that. And one of the things that I identified in my staff agenda item was that this is intended to provide for substantial flexibility depending on the specific site circumstances. One of the difficulties I think that planners have had over the years is that they've created zoning codes that have been so rigid that it doesn't apply to each business that may come to town. And while some might fit, others are like putting a square peg in a round hole. Having the ability for substantial flexibility in things such as setbacks and site design and building design and all of those things that this provides for, allows for unique businesses to continue to be unique, and they don't get pigeonholed in a specific requirement. And I believe that's what this code is trying to achieve, is to create that flexibility. And I think, Mary, you said it very well this evening. Othello wants to be business friendly. And while this code has a substantial amount of regulation in it, it is a business friendly code because, one, it's very clear, and two, it provides for a substantial amount of flexibility depending on the circumstances of a specific business.
What's the justification in residential? I think it's my understanding that the corner of a house can't be more than 33 or 30 feet from the apex of the curb or such language. Yet we go to down here on Broadway and Juniper and they can be 15 feet from the curb, you know, or from the edge.
Well, again, I think you're talking two very different set of circumstances in terms of what you're trying to achieve in a residential district versus what you're trying to achieve in a commercial district. In a residential district, there's a number of things you're trying to accomplish. One is a sense of openness and a sense of a neighborhood, if you will. Lawn to lawn to lawn, you know, a continuation of the sidewalk. And part of the reason for the setback on the corner is, of course, safety issues and sight distance. And you, as you've aptly stated, we have specific requirements in our code at those intersections to ensure that safety and sight distance are met, both in terms of setback of the structures, but more importantly, setbacks of things such as fences and hedges and the total height of those in the front yards. So there are steps in the residential district that create safety at the intersections, but also create more of a sense of neighborhood by creating those setbacks. Now, oddly enough, some cities, even in residential neighborhoods, are going to a much shorter setback in the front yard. And they're doing that because it tends to create more pedestrian activity and more pedestrian-friendly feel to a neighborhood. If porches and buildings are up near the sidewalk, people tend to actually use the sidewalks more. And that's, you know, study after study has demonstrated that. It's just a sense of human nature, I guess. In the commercial district, you're really trying to establish that look, feel, and sense of having a commercial core. And you do that, in many respects, by creating the sense of buildings near the street, buildings that are tightly packed or adjacent to each other, common walls even, in old commercial districts. But you do still have to maintain those sight distance requirements. In downtown cores, you're also typically dealing with a lot more intersections, a lot more stop signs and controlled traffic. It's generally a place where you drive and expect to have more congestion and more traffic and the need to be able to look out and become more cautious. So it's just the nature of what a commercial core is in relationship to what you anticipate in a residential district. And I may not have explained that very well, but it really is that sense of functionality in a commercial core versus the sense of place you're trying to achieve in a residential district.
And I think Mark alluded to the, and rightfully so, down here on where CBHA is at, where they built out close to the old Freddy's building, and they're right out on the curb, and you have to almost encroach into the intersection to see if cars are coming, and that would be a not a good thing, I mean, for new construction.
But we continue to allow that. A&L Supply, I hate to mention business by name, but just to give you perspective, I mean, they built a cyclone fence where they can store what they want in that fence, and they came right to the corner, right to the sidewalks. And I just think that's ridiculous that across the street, the house has to be 30 feet back, and you go the other side of the street, and it's zoned different, all of a sudden you have this fence block, and you can't see around it.
Well, that's the difference between commercial and residential.
Well, I don't agree with the whole philosophy. It's nothing personal against the Planning Commission.
Well, the other thing I think you'd find in this code that probably that fence to the sidewalk most likely would not be allowed. And the reason is because there's landscaping requirements and standards in the code that would require some landscaping treatment to take place on that site and most likely near the sidewalk or near the front of the site. So unless that's an industrial zone, that fence probably would not meet the requirements. today if this code were to be adopted, because there'd be some other needs associated with that site design that would have to be taken into consideration. I don't know that for sure how it would all play out on that specific site, because I'm not sure I'm familiar with that site, but I do know that there are requirements in this code that would provide for some softening of that fence right at the property line.
And I analyzed more. I refer to the storage buildings that were built on Broadway that went right within the 14 feet or whatever. And I guess that part didn't bother me, because on the north side of that block they were back about 30 feet. So the setback doesn't bother me as much as just the site at the intersections, that there needs to be some concession at the intersections. And I guess what you're referring to is the traffic laws, and that, you know, I'm not familiar with at this point, so I can't blanketly approve this without some assurance that, yeah, they can go 14 feet, but at some point they got to cut back so we can see around the intersection.
Well, again, the requirements of the code require that there be site distance established at each and every intersection.
Yeah, but I don't know what that is.
Well, it's whatever is determined, and maybe Jay can address it, although I probably can be catching him off guard. But, you know, it's done through standards adopted through the industry, whether it be standards of the state of Washington or standard engineering standards. I'm not sure exactly what has been applied to establish those in our code, but it does require that the intersection be reviewed and that appropriate site distances that are acceptable industry standards are met and applied in each case.
One example could be, Mark, if you look on First Avenue at the school storage building, I don't remember the cross street right there, it's been, the fence has been angled back for them site distances. Also with the trailer courts on South First Avenue, we've actually pulled the fences back for site distances, but they still meet the zero setback for their zone. But it's the corner issues that we've been addressing in the past couple of years that we're trying to put in here.
And it was the same issue on Columbia there on that new development. I think it was fourth, where they put the fence, they wanted it right along the sidewalk, and then finally at the intersection they slant it back.
Yep.
That was the attempt that we were looking at for the site distances for the newer developments. This addresses it, and our current code does address it, and we can look at it during these developments and do it. It's starting to happen now.
And Councilman, one of the things that the Planning Commission has brought forward to you is also the site plan review process. And I would suggest to you that all of these issues will have a much stronger and thorough review as a result of the site plan review process than we currently have available under our code. In other words, it'll take more than just coming in for a building permit to get a commercial building permit. You'll need to go through the site plan review process so that we can have a thorough look at all of the issues associated with the site, including one of those being the critical site distance issues. And this will allow us to take a pause and be able to do that. And so that's one of the reasons why this is being brought forward in conjunction with the commercial design standards. So we not only have the standards, but we have an effective process to apply them.
It'll be curious if, for example, the storage sheds, they actually have a storage shed, a gap, another storage shed, and a driveway where you can come out, and they're 14 feet from the curb, whether you can come out and see, because the rumor has it, it's kind of, well, it's on subject. A guy went to Moses Lake to take his driver's test, pulled out on the sidewalk to look around, and bam, he failed the test because you can't park on a sidewalk. And whether that 14-foot setback actually would allow you to do that.
Well, if I were to look at that storage site today and apply this code, it would look substantially different than it does. First of all, you'd have more controlled access, so you wouldn't be coming out between each building. The circulation would have to take place on the site, and your access onto the street would be more controlled. So you'd have one or two access points rather than four, five, or six. And the access points wouldn't be over the sidewalk. They'd be through an appropriate curb cut that was intended for vehicle travel. And you don't get ticketed for stopping on a curb cut, even if you're in the sidewalk. as long as you've looked prior to going out there and made right-of-way for pedestrians. The other thing that you would see on the storage side is that there would be some requirement for landscaping under these standards, where there currently is, I don't think there's a stick of landscaping on that site today. So it would soften the look of that site and make it more hospitable in terms of how you feel about it when you drive by. So I think you'd see a much safer site in terms of vehicular movement, and you'd see a much more attractive site that would complement the surrounding area.
Do any of the other council members have questions?
Well, I got a couple of them here, but I want to go along with him a little bit on this 15-foot setback. You know, we've got some areas, and as long as we designate what they can put in that 15-foot setback, I don't have a problem with it. But we've got two or three parking lots in town right now that you've got parking in. There's not even room for the car. All they do is back up, drive down the sidewalk, drive back on the street. And I think that's what this is alluding to, is to get away from that problem. And I don't see where there's any problem with that, to do it properly. If they need that parking in front of their building, set the building back. But you can take care of that as far as in the site process and what you can do with it. There is two or three things that I've got a little question about. One is to be sure on these parking lots that we don't run into a situation like we've got down here with our medical center that's got that one driveway that comes out on Hemlock by Second is too damn close to the street. We should maintain that 30 feet from the curb line to that drive, that egress or whatever into that parking lot. We need to maintain that so that don't happen again.
That was brought up by the chief.
Very dangerous situation.
Yeah, the police chief brought that very issue up about a month ago, and we've met with CBHA, all the staff has, and we're looking, they're about to do some changes there.
They're moving.
And we're looking at trying to correct that. Don't know if we'll get it all the way or not, Ken, but CBHA is willing to work with us on that.
Okay, now I got a couple more on this other item here. When we're talking about a change of our height, which used to be 35 feet, we're increasing that up to 64 feet or 62 feet. My question is, that's fine. I don't mind the height. We've got water towers higher than that anyway, so what's the difference in the height? But my question is, why do we maintain they can only be four stories high? You know, you can take an 8-foot floor and a 4.5-inch slab, and you can put seven stories in that. So why can't we maintain that? So if somebody wants to build a hotel or motel or whatever, that they can build that thing 6 or 7 stories. Why does it have to stop at 4 stories?
Well, I think I have a good answer for you on that. Okay. First of all, there's a provision in the code that allows a larger building, a taller building, to go to the Planning Commission and then ultimately to the council for a decision if they choose to go higher and would like to try to seek a height that's greater than what's provided for in code. So there is a process that they can go through to get to a taller building. Now, the reason why the height is set at that amount is fire code. And so there's two reasons. One is that's the generally the tallest building you can fight with a ladder truck. So you can do rescues, you can fight the fire, you can do all sorts of things up to 4 stories. Once you get over 4 stories, then you're dealing in the high-rise code. And you then can no longer rescue people through ladders or through exterior extraction of folks. You have to do things on the interior of the building, and you have to have firefighters actually go inside and take those steps to do the rescues, which means things like pressurized stairwells, pressurized elevator shafts, and completely and fully sprinkled buildings. And there's a whole different set of standards under the fire code once you get over that 62 feet in height. So that's the reason why it's set up as a height limitation in our code to that point, primarily being driven by the fire code issues. But there are provisions that if somebody wanted to work with the fire district and build to a whole different standard under the fire code, there's an ability to do that, but it needs to go through the appropriate process and seek council and Planning Commission approval.
That standard used to be six stories or less, and that's why I questioned that.
It's come down.
Okay,
that's good. That is good. They could request a variance.
Yeah.
Or it would be more than a variance, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it actually, there's a process outlined in the table where it talks about the maximum height. If you look at footnote 2, it states the Planning Commission may allow buildings or structure to be erected at additional height after a public hearing and examination of the location and upon due proof to the satisfaction of the commission that the additional height will not be detrimental. So there is a process for them to go through if they choose to go over the maximum height that's identified in the code.
Okay, I got a couple more here. I guess I have a question, or what's the matter with concrete? Is there something wrong with it? Is it bad to look at or what? I know you got one clause in there that says no bare concrete walls or no tilt-ups. What about architectural concrete? What about the federal government and the states and the colleges? They all have concrete that is bare. There's no paint on it, no nothing. But you put it in the code that we have to paint it or do something with it. I think you better take that one out.
Well, the idea, Planning Commission.
I think the idea of that is that you want to begin to establish some sense of what Othello really is going to look like over the course of the next 20 years. And if you think about some of the college campuses that were built in the 60s, very austere, big concrete walls, big concrete panels, I'm not sure that anyone would look back at that era and say, what a lovely piece of architecture that we created in the 60s. but I think what is trying to be established here is to create some sense of architectural theme throughout the city and to try to get away from the idea of just concrete flat walls, but create some character and some attractiveness and some interest in the buildings within downtown. And that's what I think this was trying to achieve, and that's what the Planning Commission brought forward to you. Structurally, there's absolutely nothing wrong with a concrete wall. It's really an aesthetic issue that really speaks to the heart of what Othello wants to be over the course of the next 20 years and how it wants to look and what image it wants
to
project.
You can make a concrete wall look, you know, pretty well with stamping and
there's ways to do that. There's the CMUs that are split and, you know, have some texture to them and have some attractiveness. There's a process, again, with any standard in the code where somebody wants to go that route, they can seek council approval to vary from these requirements. So regardless of the requirements, there's always a way to work with an applicant and be flexible in the code. It just takes one additional step for the council to be aware that this desire is out there, and somebody will bring in a nice architect's rendering to you and say, look what we've done with concrete, and if you think that fits the character of the community, it's an opportunity for you to approve that.
Okay. One more. when we get into signs, I know we've got quite a different variety of signs, but what I am approaching here is billboard signs. And I'm going to do this kind of in a two-phase situation. We have what we call a national scenic byway that goes by Othello. Maybe you don't know it, but it's called the Cooley Corridor. All right, we've set up standards on those national scenic byways that they cannot put billboards in place along that highway. But I'm finding out through the state there's a little flaw in that. The little fine print that somebody put in legislature last year have talked about changing the law to where those byways only go from one city limit to the next city limit, and there's a space in the city limit themselves that technically they could have a billboard on those. What I would like to propose is have somebody put in the clause in Othello that we will not allow billboards on our scenic byways. Be the first one in the state to get something done on a thing like that. I don't know whether the council should do it or the planning commission, but I think it's an issue that should be addressed. Because we got a mile of it out here that's going to be that way, and I just don't want to see any billboards on it.
I'm happy to say that I think we may have addressed that in the code because billboards are prohibited.
Okay.
Council, any, Dan?
A lighter note, I talked to Daryl and Eamon about this morning. These guys are faced with some really picky little things. I was in a different city last week, and I saw these four little buildings. They're being here, like this, like in the corner of a fair-sized lot. And so I asked a real estate man, I said, what are those? He said, it's a condominium. I said, what are you talking about? I said, condominiums are, no. He said, the code says they have to be attached. So these people built four buildings, they're 400 square feet, 20 by 20, to rent out, and they dug a trench in between the foundations, poured concrete, covered the trenches back up. They are connected, which is what the law says, that they have to be connected. Well, they're connected. But yeah, they're going to have to change their codes, so the next condominium is going to have the walls that have to be connected. So. But and as far as the cement buildings, 40 years ago, I guess, close to it, going to Central Washington University, they put up a concrete building, a science building up there, got a national award for design and usability for that building. So it depends on how you go about it and what they're going to propose. I think you got to have some flexibility to be able to say those kind of things. But that's the only two things. And I voted to put this off, and I at this point, I see nothing wrong with it. So
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Let's say in a block has nothing on it. Okay. A customer comes in and buys a third of the block. Wants to build a building, he sets it back 15 feet. Another guy comes in 6 months later, hey, I want the middle of it. I want to set back 30 feet. Would that be allowed?
Sure.
So you'd have one building up the street, one back, and another guy would be halfway. And
we might actually encourage that, because that what that does is create some interest in, and I'm losing the term, but there is a visual interest when you see that kind of motion of building setbacks as you go along the road. So, yes, absolutely.
I'm wondering about that. So.
Okay. Question, you seem to have answered all Ken's questions and Tim's. Getting back to the 15-foot minimum setback, if a guy wanted to come in and build a building and bring it back 15 feet from the edge of the sidewalk, could you, that is too small of a space to park cars in front without driving on the sidewalk, is that correct?
Yes.
So that would not happen?
Would not happen. That if he was just 15 feet back, what you would probably
have
is...
And he tried to park in the front against that sidewalk. See, we have the same thing up here on these older apartments up here. Mm-hmm. The tenants parallel park in there.
Yeah, that most likely
or an angle, angle park. Straight in. I don't know, yeah. But it's kind of unsafe because the sidewalk is right there, and it's we don't want to create, as Councilman Spohr has suggested, a safety issue here.
Well, that wouldn't be allowed under this code. More likely than not, that 15 feet is going to be landscaped, and the landscaping would not be a parking area. And then more likely than not, because of the way our code is now for traffic control, there would be a single or at the most two entrance points to whatever parking is established for the benefit of that building. If they're 15 feet from the street, parking's either going to be in the back or on the sides, but it's not going to be in the front of the building. And so I can assure you that that would not be a worry. You will not have cars coming up over the curb under a new construction under this code to park in that 15-foot strip, because there would be other requirements associated with the development of that site that would prohibit that.
And just to be clear, it's 15 feet from the curb, not from the sidewalk.
Well, to be real clear, it's 15 feet from the property line. So if the right-of-way is 60 feet, and let's say only 40 feet of the right-of-way is being utilized, that means you have 10 feet of right-of-way on each side that still is right-of-way. So the setback starts from the property line, which is could be, you know, off the edge of the pavement or off the edge of the sidewalk, depending on how much of the right-of-way is being utilized. Now, if your property line comes to a point and then there's an additional 10 feet before you hit the sidewalk, you're not allowed to use that for your own a business purpose or commercial purpose, but you are required to maintain it under the code. So that area would be landscaped as well, most likely, until such a time that the city may come along and decide to widen that street are to utilize the full width of the right-of-way. But the setbacks are always from the property boundary, not the edge of the street. And I think that's a key to remember if you're looking at site development. Because it's unusual that you utilize the full right-of-way under many of the city streets as they're currently configured.
Well, the storage sheds I referred to are curb, 5 feet of sidewalk, and then 10 feet to the shed.
Yeah, now Broadway may actually be built out to its full width because that is a four-lane road with a turn lane in the middle and sidewalk. So it's likely that that is out to its full width of the right-of-way, and the edge of the sidewalk is, in fact, the property boundary. But I don't know that for sure. But when you develop a site, you establish the setbacks from the property line, which is the edge of the right-of-way, not necessarily the edge of the current development.
That was built in 1954. This pertains to new construction. You're talking about the sheds across from Harvest Fresh?
No, the brand new one that Olson just put in.
Those are on a zero setback and they are on the property line. That is the property line.
Whatever, they're not 15 feet back from the sidewalk, was my point.
No, they are on the property line.
Yeah, they're actually closer.
But this wasn't in place then.
Yeah, one more thing.
Go ahead.
I asked a question this morning about what cities did you use to take this from. I've looked at a lot of building codes over my period of time of construction, what little I was in it. But really, I think you've done a good job putting this together. I think the planning department done a heck of a job. I mean, like I say, there's a few little quirks and things in there that could be adjusted, but overall, I looked at the one in the city of Bellevue one time, and I started looking at some of this in here, and I thought, well, maybe you copied some of that from there, but after I read it, no, I don't think so. But I think they did a good job on this. I think it's long overdue. I think a lot of this should have been in effect years ago, and we wouldn't have some of the problems we've got. And I think you should be commended for what they did.
I guess the consensus is that we'll place this on for consideration in our September 14th meeting as presented.
Happy to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item number 6, Kiwanis Park soccer field discussion. See, we have some homeowners live around Kiwanis Park. We'd sure like to hear what you have to say tonight. If you'd like to talk, come on up and introduce yourself, and we'd appreciate having some input.
I'm Jerry Roth. Appreciate your listening to me. I won't take up much of your time. I'm a property owner along Kiwanis Park. And I think most of you know that is a family park. It is used almost twice a day or twice a week on summertime, and it's a place that the people use all the time. They use the place for water sliding with the kids down below, or that they use for church services on Easter. They use both the Quonset huts or the gazebos quite extensively. They have playgrounds on the west end. They have a soccer field down on the west end that would probably take up three fields if it was going east and west. And I voice a strong opinion of changing the status of Kiwanis Park into a ballpark. And it's a thing they've tried to do now for the last 10 or 12 years. And every so often somebody comes up with the idea of making that into a ballpark for soccer or something. And to my mind, it would be an awful injustice to change the family park into another sports park in Othello, which we always have. I don't know how many we got now. All your school ball fields are taken care of ballparks and for soccer fields. the one up at the Lions Park, that speaks for itself. And I just wanted you to take that in consideration before you make any consideration to change the status of Kiwanis Park. I think it was dedicated for the purpose of a family park, and I think it should remain there. And thank you much.
Thank you.
I'm Janice Farley, and I live, my backyard goes into Kiwanis Park. I don't know how many of you live around the park, but it's a nice park. I mean, people aren't afraid to let their kids go over there and play. I mean, you can, there's a lot of families that let their kids go out the backyard and go into the park, then go play. They don't have to worry about the crime. And I'm very against it. I mean, out on Sundays, I mean, gosh, the people that are out there using both gazebos and everything, it's great to see them out there. They've had practices before on Saturday mornings. You can't even sit in your backyard when you have the adults out there playing soccer. The younger girls and some of the boys now, they practice Monday through Friday out there. You can't find a place to park. I have a friend that her daughters both play there. She usually parks in our front yard so she can walk through our backyard to get to the park. There's not enough parking. And if you make that into a soccer field, where are you going to put everybody? Where are they going to park? And I believe the crime will even go up worse than it is in some other parts of the city. And we don't really need it. I'm really against it.
We were approached by Bert Parrish to allow 11 and under AAU. He's got girls, so it'd be 8, 9, 10, and 11-year-old girls to play poker or play soccer in the park. And that park was set up as a passive park, family park, passive. I guess that's what you would call it. It's not the council's intent to turn it into a full-blown adult. It would be the only thing that was proposed to us is the kids, the AAU kids, not adults, and have a curfew, have a certain time that, and it was just the other side of the parent side of the, and the soccer coach was we were at our last meeting and we decided to table it to hear from some of the residents so that we could make a better decision. But no, in no way would we, even at the discussion the other night, would not become an adult soccer park at all. It was for just 11 and under AAU. Yeah.
Shannon, I would say that we need to, because I talked to a gentleman that was on Kiwanis when it was started. And because he couldn't come because he had surgery, but he said he'd be here next week. He said that when Kiwanis was started, and with all the neighbors there, I think we need to send a letter, because not everybody reads our newspapers, to all the people that live around that, so we can have input. Because he said when Kiwanis started, they worked with the neighbors, all the neighbors, as to what would be in that park and what they would like. Because if we look at Lions, we at least have a barrier. We have a road all the way around. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that are fully affected. And I think that before we do anything, we need to hear from those neighbors. Send them a letter, to get a good perspective.
That'd be a good
on
idea.
That. I was talking to somebody about Henry Bongiorno, and he started all those little trees as seedlings in his at home. And then went and planted it with this other gentleman that was talking to me. But I think that would be a good idea, because they're the ones that are really impacted. There's a difference between a fence and a road before we
That would be a great idea, is to send notes around to all of the people around the park and invite them to come and discuss the issue.
We'll get them out tomorrow, give them as much advance notice as possible for next Monday.
And I had also called and asked requirements about parking, because if you go down there, especially if you go down with the size of my family, we take one whole parking place. There is, we do not have parking, enough parking, and Eamon said we didn't have anything designed as to how much parking we would need. But I know that when soccer starts up, there is a real problem with parking. Mm-hmm. So, thank you.
I got a little comment. I missed last meeting, but, you know, I love sports like anybody else does, but I think it comes to the point that one of our parks ought to remain like it is. I mean, we don't need sports in every park that we've got, and that is a passive park, and I think it should remain that way. I hate to take offense to the soccer team or anybody else, but we've got sports in other parks. We're proposing a new park. We could do it at that park or whatever, but I think that we should have one family park. We've got Pioneer Park, which is kind of considered a family park, but it's too small for anybody to do anything down there anyway. But that was what that was set up for, and I was here when it happened, and I kind of go along with Jerry. I think it should remain like it is.
Okay. We'll get notices out to all of the residents around the park, and we'll put it on our agenda for our next meeting. Thank you for coming. Sorry you had to sit through all that, but we sure appreciate it. Item number 7, Centennial Brick Project. Deb?
Thank you, Mayor and Council. The Centennial Committee is working on several projects for the upcoming Centennial. We've got a calendar, t-shirts, posters, signs, banners, lots more to come. Beard growing contest, there's lots of fun to come. And this is all geared towards a 2-day event honoring the city's centennial and continuing the centennial theme through 2010. One project that we would like to ask our council for their support is a fundraising brick project. There's a section of sidewalk in front of City Hall that is cracked. And it's 8 by 21.5 feet. So it's this section here. And there's a huge crack down here, and we've determined that the elevation at this point or somewhere out there is 1099. So we would like to propose. I'm going to go with the 1099 now.
Sounds like a text.
Is that close enough for you?
So we're going to propose that the section of the sidewalk be replaced with a brick fundraising project. And you have a sample up here, which was engraved by a monumental business in Wenatchee. If agreed to, and if we can continue on with this, we'll start marketing this at the upcoming fair, along with, we're going to have a area out at the fair to market some of our t-shirts and hats and other, and the calendar that we've been working on too. So there's cost to this. There's cost to purchase the bricks, and there's cost to get them engraved, and the cost to remove this section of sidewalk. We propose that we put in some kind of a heating system underneath the bricks so that we don't have to deal with scraping them or throwing salt on them. There's a cost to bring the electricity out to the front of the building to get that heating system put down too, and then to install the bricks back in. We're asking that council pay for a portion of these costs. We would like to have a nice big piece of granite installed to put down to engrave the elevation and the date of incorporation and maybe some information about the centennial. So there'd be a cost for that piece of granite and for the electrical and the heating system and for the bricks that we don't sell. So maybe approximately $6,000 from the city. The Centennial Committee would market them, would pay for the bricks that are going to be engraved, and Public Works would take it out and install the bricks. We'd like to start this project as soon as possible, you know, start marketing them and maybe have a cutoff for the orders for the engraving towards the end of January in order to get them all engraved first thing in February by the vendor, and then have everything installed by May 1st, because our centennial will be May 22nd and 23rd. And it's a way to honor your family, a business, homesteaders in the area, people that have been here, our parents, our families, you know, to get their name put on a brick, and they'll be there. It'll be out there for a long time. I gave you some samples. I went to Wenatchee and had this engraved on Friday, and I gave you a copy of some pictures of the Wenatchee Community Center, and they've done this similar project. It's that one. Can you hold that up? It's this one here. And they did the fundraiser. They took an old church and converted it into their community center, and this is one of their projects to raise funds for the community center. So it is a good way to raise funds. You can go, you can get a contract with a business to do the fundraisers, but we believe that if there's a subcommittee organized within the centennial, that we could do it ourselves and not have to pay the cost with going through a business. I mean, it'd be an easy way to do a promotion within our community by using the local media. You have any questions? We have lots of people here from the Centennial Committee.
The concrete is going to have to be fixed anyway. It's cracked. I mean, we're going to have to fix it anyway. The only additional cost to the city would be the heating underneath. That it would probably be a good idea to have there anyway, because it's kind of a safety issue, because it goes from ice to sleet to rain, or to wet as you walk into this city hall. So I think it's a great idea. I think it'll be there forever and ever, and a lot of information, and it plays into the centennial.
We're also asking for the council to pay for the piece of granite and the engraving, which is approximately $450, but it would show the city of Othello, the date of incorporation, the elevation, and you know, we could play up on the centennial too. There was an example on the back of one of your sheets, but what we could have engraved on the piece of granite. So it'd be part of the centennial program. Be part of a way to have your family involved in the centennial, and get your name put on a piece of brick.
I would, based on my background experience with brick, vote no on this. I think it's a hazard waiting to happen. The settling of bricks, the unevenness, the ants bringing up the sand, and to me, I don't agree with putting bricks in a main entrance to a building. And I mocked Moses Lake. They have thought it was a big thing to put bricks in their sidewalks in front of their businesses, and I think it's ridiculous when we have a material such as concrete available. So my personal opinion on a project like this would be no.
I think this is a great idea. You know, if the project is done right, the bricks are laid right, but, they'll last years and years, longer than what blue will ever last. And if it's done properly right, if the city crew is doing it, especially with the heating pad underneath it, it will preserve it a lot longer, so we don't have the water and the ice damage and the freezing to it. And I think it'll be a great beautification project for the permanent building. It look real nice. It's another way to get the community involved and get, they're buying a little piece of the centennial. And you see a lot of other communities doing them too. And I haven't seen that many problems with ones.
If it's done right, it won't ever settle. If it's done right. They use bricks in the old streets. In the old days, part of Spokane still has them. You don't see even a dip in them.
Fort Worth, Texas? Yeah, they used to drive cattle. They used to back and put them on rails there. And they still have the same brick in the streets that they had when they were railroading cattle back to Chicago.
I was in Fort Worth last week, and I have pictures of these big longhorns walking right down brick streets. I got them on my phone. I can show them to you.
So I think if it's done right, I think that's the key to the, that's kind of the key.
Let me make one more comment on this. I don't know, Mark, maybe you're right in some ways in the old days when they put brick in, but if we'll go in there and put a rat slab or whatever you want to call it underneath it, sub slab, and then actually embed these in it and lay it like it should be done, there's no problem with it. Go to the University of Washington, go into the hospital section. You walk right down through the middle of a whole bunch of them. They're all put in there by doctors. And piece by piece, each one of them bricks has got some doctor's name on them. And I don't see them flaking off. I don't see them peeling up. I don't see anybody breaking their legs trying to get in and out of the hospital. Maybe that's how they support it. I don't know. I don't think if they're put in there right, you shouldn't have a problem with it. And we will.
Just
another comment on this is that on those total brick out there, I'm going to rephrase it, somewhere between 800 and 1,000 brick to brick that little area. You wouldn't think it'd take that many, but that's about what it'll take to put in that area. And we're thinking about maybe putting some borders in it with the blanks in them so that they don't show the actual names. And then we can still probably go ahead and put our benches back up there, at least the one, maybe one on each side, and continue with what we've got started out there. And depending on how many we sell, if we sell 250 or if we sell 500, we would probably support a portion of this cost too. It probably wouldn't totally come out of the city's fund, but we can take care of a portion of that through the Centennial Committee too. So.
And one of the things too that I forgot to report was the money that we raised from this project, we're going to put right back into the community. One of the things that the Centennial Committee wants to do is provide a couple scholarships to the graduating class of 2010, and hopefully we would have enough to do two nice scholarships during graduation too. So the money goes right back into the community for our projects, and that's one of our goals.
See, I have no objection to that. It's a fundraiser. If it was me, I'd put bricks on each side of that walkway.
You need a, do we need to put this on our agenda, or do we just need a
if council's okay, direction? We'll address this for the ending fund balance. We've talked to Mike about it. And if we are going to need additional funding, we'll come back with a budget amendment. But we probably won't as it stands right now. But if we do, we'll come back and say, this is where that $6,000, right?
About
$6,000 came from.
And we're planning on doing this, you know, in early spring, so it probably could actually come out of the other fund, you know, next year's budget.
You know, this is a great example of one person has one idea. Of course, the whole staff supports this. But Debbie saw this in another city or someplace else, brought it back and said, why don't we do this here? So she started the ball on this.
Yeah, my name is Emo Martinez. I'm also the member for the Centennial. Councilman Spohr, the bricks, you're right. They do cause trouble, but that was put way, way back then. I've seen it in Moses Lake and in Ephrata. But this time around, we're gonna do it right the first time. Plus, we're going to treat our water and possibly our grass and bushes around the building to keep them away periodically. So that needs to be addressed.
Do things that they're conducive to a brick area.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And also the thing with the second spot, what's going to happen if we sell out? Do we have a second spot for it? Something to think about. They get greedy, they want some.
Council, how does council feel about, because I'm sure they want to sell bricks out at the fair, and we, you know, that's coming up the 18th and the 19th, and So they need to...
We are ready to sell.
They need to know if they're... Yeah, anybody wants to buy one can buy one, right? And that guy in the gray shirt.
They haven't heard any prices yet.
Well, we don't have a fee established yet because we would like to get a subcommittee of the annual committee together to establish fees. So there might be two different fees, one for the smaller brick and then there's a larger brick that businesses can purchase. So at the fair, we would like to just start talking and generating interest, and then we have a meeting the 1st of October and maybe a subcommittee can be developed and come up with costs because it has to be done pretty quickly within 3 to 4 months. 3 months actually
of working. Is there an estimate on how much they cost?
I think, yeah, I think what was you talking, $150 or, I mean, is that?
I think we can go ahead and say what we got in mind. I think the brick themselves, the time we get the brick and then engraving, we're between $18 and $20 a brick. That's the ones that are engraved. The bricks are about $2 a piece, right? Somewhere in that $1.81, but anyway. What our thought is, I know this sounds high or maybe it sounds low, but what we're thinking is somewhere between $40 and $50 per brick to have yourself name engraved. The double brick, the double sized ones, they would probably run $100, which are twice the size, but you know, for businesses or a big family, maybe they'd want to put the other. Don't quote me in the paper yet, because I want to be sure when I go through the committee here what we're doing. But that's kind of our thought of what our price range is at.
And if you sell 800 bricks, 1,000 bricks, there yep. you go. There's
see that's yeah. what we're saying.
Don't
get
the money for those scholarships.
Yeah, it's going for a good cause.
I'm just not sure administratively this doesn't need to come up as a before council. This is an expenditure of unbudgeted funds.
Well, it can be taken out of existing funds unless we need to do a budget amendment for which we put on the agenda next week if that's what you're asking for.
Yes. I mean, we could do any project come out of the general fund that's not in the budget now. We normally vote on it.
And we can write that for next week.
Okay, we'll put it on our... Just our next
meeting.
See, we can actually run it through our budget for next year if it's a problem for this year.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to actually do this project till spring.
Well, you don't need any money this year.
We just want to have it completely done.
Problem solved. So the budget.
Completely done by May 1st or May 22nd.
So it needs to be addressed in our budget budgeting meeting.
If you sell 1,000 bricks and make 4 council members mad, then you're going to have to go to plan B.
Well, that's a good point. We were wanting to get a consensus of whether to start, talking to people out of the fair about it, too.
Right.
Consensus is a lot different than a motion.
We won't be selling at the fair because we don't have a subcommittee yet.
Why don't we just end this next Monday, we will just do something and appropriate the monies.
Let's get this done. You
just
guys need
done.
To get it done.
That's fine.
Some of the council wants to draw this out till next year. You need to sell bricks out at the fair.
Get
so
done.
Let's put it on our agenda for our next meeting.
Sounds good to me.
You okay with that, Mike?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you get a different price by then?
Yep. I'll do it.
Item number. Is there any more brick? Talk about bricks.
Any more brick throwing?
Anybody want to throw one?
Item number 8, committee reports. Council have anything to report on committee meetings?
We got one.
Go ahead.
Cooley Corner. Back to that again. I went back to Denver to the National Scenic Byway Conference. Tim Alling was the chair, I'm the vice chair of the Cooley Corridor. We put on a presentation back there for our Cooley Corridor and what we've done up and down the corridor. And it was kind of like a workshop, but we had a good group of people in there. They were really thrilled with what we what we give them and the ideas of what we had. We give them a little incentive, we give them a raffle ticket, and we give away two of the brand new John Hite Eastern Washington books. You haven't seen those yet, they're great. They're about half again as big as the last ones we had. So we give those away. While we were back there, Washington State, through their 14 Washington byways, we got a special award for interpretive, actually it was an interpretive award for what we've done for the, not only the Coulee Corridor, but up and down our scenic byways. And I've got a press release that I'm gonna release next week, so I'll get with the papers and I'll actually add more to what we did there. But it was a great deal, we learned a lot, and rubbed shoulders with people from Washington, D.C. and whatnot, trying to get some more action out here on wildlife and the refuge, see if they can pump some more money into this thing, help us out as a Coulee Corridor, help a fellow out as a fellow itself, and a lot of things. I mean, it was well worth going to. Sorry I missed the council meeting, but it worked out great.
Sounds like a good trip. Has the pool committee met since the pool has closed?
Yeah, the 14th of this month.
Yeah. Of September?
Yeah, 24th, excuse me.
Okay.
Go ahead, Ken. The ACDC, we recently had our first annual golf tournament. Went very well. We used it as a fundraiser, and we did very well. I'm generating some revenues for that. For the first time, we had 11 teams show up. It was a really good day. We had a function afterwards, some dinner, and I'd say we're ready and pumped to do it again next year. And also at the ACDC, we have a meeting coming up this Thursday. It's scheduled in Ritzville, 6 o'clock, if anybody's interested, we'll carpool from here. And also, the ACDC is hosting on October 9th at McFarland Junior High a business seminar, some conferences. I don't know the official name for it, Amy.
It's a business conference. There'll be several different professional expert speakers to help small businesses.
We have some very good topics that we're discussing on that.
Business development conference.
You know, we live in a with the recession that we're in right now. We live in a good area. You know, we had a new business come into town that was here tonight. We've got new restaurants opening up and reopening, and we do have some activity here. We building permits are up, we're doing pretty well here, and we just keep plugging away at it, like the Economic Development Council, and do everything we can to be business friendly. Eleanor, you're still on community networking. I think you've been on it since it was first. How are we doing there? Or is Bart? I know early on there was a funding issue, and I was.
There's still a funding issue.
Is it not looking good for next year, or even finishing out this year?
I think the executive team was meeting whether they scale back, what they do, but there is a real funding issue there on the network. And the network has lots of partners, and so that would be interesting.
Is Barbara still running? Barbara's still running that, the network?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Item number nine, unfinished business. Item number 10, new business.
Okay. How are we standing on looking at for a new park?
There's a couple avenues that we're pursuing, and to divulge areas right now might jeopardize the sale price, but there's a couple of organizations that own some property that we are looking at. There's nothing solidified yet, though. We're all looking, though.
That's something that we need to talk about for 2010, because we really do need another big park. Mm-hmm. Our parks are overused, and you know, just like tonight, they're wanting to the girls don't have a place to practice, and
right.
The adult soccer leagues kind of just take over, and I can understand, you know, Bert's position there too, but we do need another park. Pretty obvious, and that's something we should probably get pretty aggressive on between now and next spring, I would think.
So, Eamon, are we in negotiations? We've been talking 8 years in a row about doing a park.
We're not in negotiations, no, but we've,
there
are a couple of parcels that we have made an attempt to open up the line of communications, and they haven't responded back. That's kind of where we're at with both of them.
If there were any terms or anything, we would come to council with it. We haven't got anything to bring you yet.
But what we've done is just initiated that, you know, hey, we'd be interested in this parcel. And we're waiting for them to.
Just a half step more is one party that we're talking to has a parcel that would be advantageous for the city, and they've asked us to look for another parcel for them. And if we can find something like that, then they would sell us theirs. So it's that kind of mix.
But we're just kind of, okay. Yeah, everything's, as soon as something starts to gel, then the council will be the first to know, but it's something we probably need to get pretty aggressive on.
We need to get real aggressive on that, because we've been collecting, and we're going to have $300,000, and we've been talking mm-hmm. about doing that. We don't want to be like the pool and be without. I mean, we have been struggling for a long time for fields. You know, I mean, we have Tadaris Park out there, and I think people forget that. You know, we need to utilize that a little bit more, but we do need
right.
stuff inside the city, especially when we're collecting taxes on that, and they have it sitting there, so
yeah.
We need to be real aggressive so we can have it ready for next spring.
We also need to be cognizant of our comprehensive plan and the growth area of the city where we're going to grow. We need to look at in those areas, and that's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And as you know, land is a little bit difficult to get a hold of right now. You can get a corner, but that's not going to be a park.
No.
You know, there may be when is our budget at our next workshop?
Mm-hmm. October 5th.
Yeah, maybe that's something that can be discussed there at our budget meeting. Any more new business?
Yeah, I just got one. This weekend was on the city's website using it. And how long has that site been up now? About 7 years?
Yeah, it was 7 or 8 years.
Yes, and I noticed we got a counter line. And I noticed it's over 1.3 million hits on our webpage. So it's very, very well being used very well. And it's just really impressive to see those numbers and how many hits we're getting.
Mm-hmm. I've got one more thing before we close the shop here. On our centennial posters and whatnot, which is related to this, we added something new to our poster. We not only have it on our website, but we're going to get with the modern age to kind of practice this new game of text messaging. We're putting a new text deal in our poster. We're going to trial and error. Why not? kids are doing it. Just because all of us sat here, we're antique, too old to get into it. We decided we're going to try it and see what happens. So if you see this new poster come out and you look at this funny little thing down here at the bottom, got a bunch of numbers and it says O-T-H-C-E-N-T on it. Boy, take your phone and tap into it, see what you get. I'm just going to leave it that way.
I'm speaking not as a newspaper now, but as an educator. I have a piece of really neat news. I think you guys, we just found out today at 5 o'clock that McFarland Middle School, they received the 2009 School Distinction Award by the state as being in the top 5% of improving schools in the middle school level in the state.
Yeah.
So they received this award today, and they're one of 25 middle schools in the state that has received this award this year because of the increase in the Wausau scores.
Great.
So our seventh grade was like 2% from actually making EYP, which is better than we've ever done before. I thought you guys would like to hear that.
That's good news. That's great. Any more? New business, old business? We'll adjourn to meet the workshop. Thank you.
Oh,
yeah.